And we're live.
Hello, Emerald City. What's doing? What's happening? It's the new episode of Fans of Power, or whenever you're listening to it. As of right now, it is the current Fans of Power right now. And I'm Tyler T-Rex Baker. And of course, with me as always, the Garth to my Wayne, the Wayne to my Garth, however you want to view us. Maybe you don't see us as always, a 90s SNL skit that made two great movies. Joe Amato.
What's up, T-Rex? How you doing?
I'm ready to have an action-packed episode full of, you know, good stories, bad stories, or overlooked stories, just a lot of, I'm just ready to dig down deep into the Masters of the Universe mythology and provide listeners with some kick-ass quality entertainment for their eyes, for their ears, to share with their children, to share with their wife, to let them know what they're missing out on, if they're not getting into it, with their husband, or whoever's listening to you. Whoever you're telling about your infatuation with this property, you know, this is something that you could share, that you could sit down on a Friday evening after dinner, yeah, put on some popcorn and, you know, pop us on an iPad or a tablet or whatever it is, and sit down with somebody who maybe just doesn't quite get it, and just have them listen to us for about an hour or so.
That's and right. See if whatever medium, whether it's an audio medium or a video.
Like if me and Joe were to show up at your doorstep, that we would be welcomed into your home to try and sell you on Masters. Kind of like, you know, encyclopedia or dictionary salesman. But you know what? We're not asking any money. We just want your time and your understanding to let you know
I like it.
That there are better things to do with your time.
Well, hopefully they wouldn't slam the door in our face.
And the She-Ra on Netflix or picking up the compilation books available on Amazon.com and so on and so forth, and going to flea markets and buying vintage toys for your children and for you to enjoy and set up at your office or in your man cave at home or wherever, you know.
If they have good flea markets, yeah, I guess. Good flea
markets, yeah. Going on eBay, spending hours searching for a vintage metal card client because, damn it, that's who you really want and that's who you really need in your collection.
That's right. Well, hopefully after this episode, they'll do some searching for some particular things. Because like you said, whether it's really good stories, whether it's questionable stories, whether it's a cartoon, comics, whatever, we'll cover it all. So I did some searching.
Okay, man, I told Joe Waba I was going to stop interrupting him here. I remember. All right, I just caught myself. So I'm going to save what I just intended to say for later on. I'm not doing that here.
Okay. Well, that's all right, man. But, well, there's somebody, like I said, there's somebody that, you know, never had a story for the vintage mini comics, and, you know, that's Faker. And like I said, I've always wanted to have more of them. And I don't know how I always missed this one sticker book, but there's a lot of those, you know, sticker fun books out there. And beyond just being books that you just place the pretty stickers on the pages, the majority of them had some good stories. I mean, well, they had stories, and some could be good, some could be bad. But there's this one in particular that had an interesting story on Faker. Now, the story could be kind of, I guess you could say, questionable because, you know, it's like everywhere. But I thought, man, they had a good premise for it's a shame that that was put into a sticker fun story medium, because I think if this could have been a mini comic or another book or even an episode of a cartoon, I think they could have really expanded upon it. Now, I shared these scans with Tyler, and I'm curious. Like I said, I want to hear your opinion first time before I talk, because like I said, I enjoyed it even with its weird, questionable stuff, because they meshed three forms of medium, if you will, for the sorceress in her origin into one. It's the first time I think I've ever seen references of her all put into one story. So, of course, we'll flesh it out and talk about later. Won't say the whole entire thing, but what did you think of this story? Complete madness? Garbage? Interesting? What?
Well, nothing polite to say about it like you just did.
Okay.
That's just, you know, Joe would make a great snake oil salesman. I mean, could sell people, you know, obviously he knows this is just garbage. It's that residue at the bottom of a trash can. Well, obviously it's not that bad. That would be the Thundercat T-Man crossover. No, really, what I'm trying to say is that Joe told me about this sticker book story. He was like, it's an origin of Faker. You won't believe how great it is. And, of course, keep in mind, Joe had never looked inside this book before. So when it arrives, he's trying to tell me, you know, he's it's like he was desperate to convince himself that he spent this money on eBay and got a quality product. And even though it's a sticker book, it's the classics, but he was expecting this, you know, like he put on his fedora, went out to Cairo and got Salah and a bunch of, you know, hired hands and dug up the arc of Faker and found this unlocked story of this character. And that was not the case here, people. This is what, and there's been some real stinker He-Man stories over the years in various, you know, golden books, the cartoons and the comic books and whatever. This is just downright goofy in a way that where you just kind of feel like it, not an offensive way, where you get angry and it's like, man, I can't believe I spent money on this. Just the, you know, to read through it, it's got some of the, and it expects you to just tell the story with not a whole lot of explanation, just very, very simplistic dialogue with an image, and you can draw a whole lot of conclusions from it just on the image alone. And not to jump too far ahead, but the sorceress looks up in the sky and sees a thunderstorm going. Oh boy, there's trouble. I better get a He-Man. So it's like a summer shower apparently is a red alert on Eternia. At least it was like, this sorceress is like an old biddy. You know, she's just like thinking like, lady, this is not trouble. It's a storm shower. It's a, you know, a thunderstorm, for crying out loud. Let me send Zoar out to get He-Man. He-Man can stop this thunderstorm here.
You know what's funny? It's real quick. I apologize. Real quick, I want to say one thing. What you just said there. The sorceress sends out Zoar. That's what was different. Now, people, this isn't the sorceress slash goddess that we knew from, you know, the early days where she, you know, basically looks just like Teela. This was Filmation sorceress. But then she's sending out Zoar. And I was like, okay, you just crossed Filmation. You just took Zoar, basically the Zoar from the old mini comics, without minus, you know, like, I guess some of the weapons and armor in some of those mini comics. But you're meshing these two worlds, because as we know, for most people, if they would look, they'd be like, why is the sorceress talking to Zoar? The sorceress is Zoar, but not this, because they're putting the two mediums together. Even one other panel, how it starts off is she's outside enjoying, I guess, a nice summer day with some creatures. So the sorceress is in her human form outside of Castle Grayskull. And then they're talking about, you know, He-Man, just referencing He-Man. Then they show an image of He-Man with the weapons that the goddess gave him slash sorceress in, you know, the original mini comics when he got that in before, you know, the Prince Adam days. So he even says, by the goddess's gifts. So it's like, okay, he's saying the goddess's gifts, they're showing the sorceress, then they're showing the old Zoar. It was three worlds collided into one. I thought it was like a head explosion, like the person who wrote this story must have been given every reference possible and just went with it, I guess. I don't know.
I think he could probably get away with saying, when he's saying by the goddess, like, as if like by the elders, you know, by the grace of the goddess, you know, like the spirit above, so to speak. I that one, I feel like when I read that, I didn't immediately think, you know, the green goddess, you know, as we come to know her, because that's the more logical name to call her. But they're definitely all over the place for. Because it came out, this particular book came out in 83, and the cartoon debuted, I think, in the fall of 83 here in the States and in the UK. So this book was definitely in production around the same time Filmation was. So it's like, I could appreciate them trying to tie in what the toy line was doing currently with the cartoon that was going to be the big flagship for the shows, or for the toy line. So I get these mistakes. I can appreciate them. Mm-hmm. It's just downright goofy story that's being told in it, like, yeah. Stuff like that, when you're trying to acknowledge the different forms of media and the various plot points of the, you know, so many different canons, I don't you know, get all bent out of shape and then kick stuff and break stuff over, you know, get it right, you're straightening it out here. At least with the older stuff, you know, I kind of felt like it, because everything was constantly changing, and really to be picking on a sticker book just kind of seems, you know, really too, you know, cruel to be doing that. But the story is just so, you know.
Well, given the quick little premise of the story of what Skeletor's trying to do and accomplish, and then we can just say little parts of it, but
look at you trying to hype this up as if, like, well, this is master plan. Wait for people to actually hear what this master plan is, you know, it's...
Well, I mean, you know, the master plan basically is, yes, a Skeletor, they find out that there's going to be they're going to celebrate the Peace Among Eternia or something with the longest running of Eternia's Peace. And they're going to have a masquerade ball. Skeletor, again, I think that they're making references of some of the older stuff. With his energy blade, he uses his power. First he uses that that window, that magic window, to where he's able to see and find out about this masquerade ball.
It didn't look like a magic window. It looked like a TV set, like a news feed, you know.
Well, do you remember he did that in, I think, the other... the other story in that one record book, I thought in the other story, remember, or one of, I don't know, I'm trying to remember one of those storybook of the record.
The sticker book, it looks like it's a TV screen. Right. Of King Randor, you know, talking, and Skeletor's like, huh, you know, just he caught the breaking news of what's going on. Not to mention his threat to Zoar the Falcon. It's like, you know, it's just as Kane's getting wagging his sword at her.
Yeah, to make her tough.
Like Zoar just caves in immediately. Like, it just seems so...
Yeah, because he wants to find out what's going on. Zoar goes to fly, you know, to catch He-Man, and somehow immediately gets caught by Trapjaw in a netted bag or something. And then that's when Skeletor's like, tell me, you know, like, what's going on. And then she speaks of this masquerade ball or said some nonsense. So he figures he's going to get the jump. Like, this is my opportunity to finally get He-Man. So before, I guess, when He-Man is arriving to the masquerade ball with Teela, you see everybody, you know, like in the celebration, you see Manny Faces, you see King Randor, but again, no Queen Marlena, but there is a King Randor. And Triclops is like around the corner, and he's able to see about what's going on. So that gave the jump for Faker to make his debut. Faker jumps along with Evil Lyn to capture He-Man and to capture Teela. And Big Skeletor was like, they'll make perfect, you know, like, I guess, people that could disguise themselves as Teela and He-Man. So they trap them, and it's like they're, I don't know, surrounded by snakes, and they're frightened or whatever. They're hidden somewhere. Like, He-Man doesn't have that superpower where I guess he can magically just bust through things. He could just get captured easily. And so when Faker makes his appearance at the ball with Evil Lyn at his side, you see Faker, you know, blue skin, his orange little vest, and like this white mask, almost like how my mask is, except it's all white. And he's wearing this, and that's where, you know, King Randor says something like, you know, welcome He-Man. And somebody in the crowd said, oh, look, He-Man's skin's blue. That's clever. Like, they think it's a joke, you know, that He-Man's just painting himself up for the ball. But of course, that's Faker in disguise. Then
I thought it was King Randor saying that.
I'm sorry, King Randor. What did I say? I lost my mind. Yeah, King.
Well, it says someone, because I thought for sure. Make King Randor look like a drunk.
Hold on, let me look. I'm keeping this off the camera because there's something that I'm gonna reference later at the end of the show. It'll be for the fans. But okay, maybe he did say both. I thought there was just some dork in the background wearing a mask. But yeah, he's like, he's painting himself blue, and that hair. What a great idea! So this is supposed to be the big disguise, and eventually the sorceress revives Zoar, and this is what was cool. I told you earlier where he was talking about, you know, the weapons from the goddess that he got. Well, when He-Man was captured, he was just in his, like, this orange, almost Prince Adam type vest, if you will. It was, or whatever the hell color it was. But he was in some kind of vest, and he didn't have his power harness, obviously, because, well, he's not transformed into He-Man. He needs to get these. So Zoar has to fly his power sword and his harness to him to give him his strength. But Ram Man and Man-at-Arms follow Zoar in one of the sky sleds, follow Zoar, and then eventually... He-Man and Teela are freed from this, like, rock that they're imprisoned in. Ram Man busts them through. And Beastman sees this. And Beastman's like, you know, he's got to warn his master. And he takes off. He gets into the Wind Raider. Now, that's, I was like, wait a second. Man-at-Arms and Ram Man arrived on the sky sled. What is the Wind Raider doing here? Because it's like they were like, oh, God, we have nothing to do. Like, they were stuck. They couldn't get back. It's because Beastman took the Wind Raider. It's like, but that's not how they arrived. It was on a Wind Raider. So anyways, as they're figuring, oh, God, what are they going to do? Out of nowhere, Zodak, how we talked about in the last episode, he makes another appearance. And it's a suddenly an image appears. And all he says is, remember Point Dread. You know, and so what was cool is that Point Dread and the Talon Fighter that you love, sure enough, they reference it again, high atop a mountain peak. And they get into that, fly off, get back to, hold on a second, there's only a couple pages in this freaking thing. They get back quickly and takes care of Beast Man. Then He-Man comes into the masquerade ball, busts up the masquerade ball, gets rid of Faker. It ends with just a crazy scene of He-Man sitting around a table. One guy in the background says, Hot Fudge, my favorite. And He-Man goes, woo. So I was like, wait, was that the end of this book? So, I mean, what? Now here, didn't mean to ramble, because like you said, I know I get long-winded. What sucks is...
I never said that.
Well, I mean, well, I don't know. I guess I say it. But I get long-winded. Is this could have been, I think, an interesting story if it wasn't so quick and scat, you know, sporadic everywhere. Because the thought of, you know, what if they did take their time? Like I said, it is a golden book. This is Golden that did it, but it's a sticker book. What if they took their time? And what if they did try to find a cool way of having Faker make his debut in his blue color and masquerading as He-Man? Because it's like, okay, then it makes sense why you're seeing a blue He-Man. Otherwise, like, wait, why is He-Man blue? But if this was a masquerade ball? So this was a little scattered, and it sucks that we could have had a cool Faker story because I thought we were going to get something cool, but it's just quick. I guess it's a sticker book. What can you expect? But do you think they could have made it better if this would have been in another medium, like possibly one of the hard book, golden books or something?
No.
He's like, no, that's it. It was bad. No. I think it got been good.
Well, it's not. It's, if you're trying, if this is the story, is like, if the whole point of Faker is people are supposed to look at it and believe that this is He-Man. Instead, they got Faker showing up with a mask on. No one can tell it's not really He-Man, not even Man at Arms, but he can see the woman next to Faker wearing a mask. Clearly knows it's not Teela, but
yeah,
the blue-skinned, orange-haired He-Man, you know, is oblivious to Man-at-Arms, but he it's just there were so many, you know, silly things throughout the book. You know, the image of Ram-Man and Man-at-Arms on the battle ram, it looked like they were floating in the air.
It and
I guess it
things.
Was just kind of how it was drawn. It looked like they were floating around in the clouds.
Yeah,
but that last page where He-Man just says "woo" is like maybe he let out a big fart or something like that.
Yeah.
And the guy behind it looks like a Ninja Turtle standing in the back going "hot fudge, my favorite." What does that even mean?
I know. I was...
You know, it's like I enjoy random things in comedy. You know, it's like what did they do that for? But this makes absolutely no sense. Some background character that if you look at it looks like a Ninja Turtle. Says hot fudge, and he's not doing anything. He's not at the table. He's not holding any hot fudge.
We need to make
it. He's just standing there.
We need hot fudge for classics. We got to get him done by Super 7. Hot fudge turtle man in the background. If they could do tug of war.
Like, you know, I'd love to talk. We need to get the writer who wrote the story of this and get him on and have him on for about an hour and 20 minutes. Now, if you wrote the last scene here, what the hell were you talking about?
And why did Faker all of a sudden, if people look, the exact last scene of Faker in the background of Skeletor, Skeletor's dragging Faker away, but Faker now has He-Man's harness. The whole time, you know, like you, I guess, were under an impression that it would have been the orange, because I thought they showed it, his orange Skeletor Faker armor, but it's drawn as the He-Man armor, and he's like stiff as a board like this being drug in the background. Did you even catch that part? It was on the stairway. Cracked me up.
Oh yeah, that reminds me too where He-Man comes in and crashes the party and he's smacking stuff off the tables, which for whatever reason. Didn't he come in the dining room and starts knocking people's plates off the table?
Yeah, I was assuming that one of the people
This wasn't supposed to happen just yet. And it's just it turns into one of the silliest, inoffensive He-Man stories that I've ever come across. You know, the trap is bad because of the artwork is so silly and bad, a less reputable story. There's, you know, bad episodes of filmation, you know, that just, but this is just downright goofy. Not like Greatest Showman Eternity where you just want like, man, this sucks big time. Like, this is just downright goofy. Like, you just, I don't, it's almost like you could picture like Monty Python or Benny Hill doing a version of He-Man. It's, you know, it's like you could picture John Cleese is dressed up as Faker, you know, but he's an imposter He-Man, but he, you know, he's a masquerade mask. No one can tell it's not He-Man, but he's got blue skin. It's just bonkers, you know, like the candy. It's just bonkers. This whole thing. I hope that you'll, you know, scan a few of these images for people to see just how nutty the story is.
I will. I'll have to show them. I mean, because it is outright just, I mean, it is nuts. It's, like I said, it's always fun to see new art because, like I said, R.L. Allen, it's the same artist, I believe, that did a lot of the puzzle art, you know, the iconic puzzle art that we've seen. He's the artist that did this. And it's a shame. It's like I said, oh, we got some more cool Faker art. Oh, we got some stuff of the Talon Fighter. And it's, you know, it's for me, I always eat up the art, you know, and it's a shame that some of them are just limited to like the top portion or just a head. Some parts you get the whole bodies or the whole vehicle. I guess I love the art. And it just, that's the thing. I was under the impression we're going to get something really interesting. Cause like I said, it does suck that yes, this story had to be put into the sticker fund book, because I really thought that if it could have been fleshed out, it could have been, at least in my opinion, maybe more interesting if it was fleshed out. But when you're presented with madness, immediately the madness is just in your head and you're thinking, this is just insane. It's terrible. But I mean, I really think it could have been fleshed out properly. So like I said, just when I thought I don't know how I missed this. I have all the other sticker books. This one I didn't have. So I was so excited, you know, and it sucks. It wasn't what I was expecting. You know, still interesting, but man, I was excited. I was like, Tyler, man, you ain't going to believe it. They're going to have an origin of Faker. And then we got that.
Yeah, and I would love to, you know, I'm still fascinated by Hot Fudge.
I don't get it. I guess, well, he wanted the stuff.
I love to, you know, we could bring in James Lipton from inside the Actors Studio and ask this guy, you know, a full stack of questions and ask him to elaborate, you know, what the hell do you mean by Hot Fudge, my favorite? You know, it just.
Yeah. So fans, I think, could get a kick out of it. I mean, I'll show images later. I think they could. But, yeah, with this dialogue, like you said, the whole Hot Fudge and then just He-Man going, woof, that's the last piece of dialogue in that story. It's like, I don't know. I was hoping maybe was I missing a page?
It doesn't make any sense, but it's one of those, you know, a story within a coloring book. And coloring books are not supposed to be, you know, coherent stories. They're just – something for youngsters, and I'm like, that's why I'm not. It's just, that's why it's inoffensive. It's just silly, you know. You roll your eyes at kind of story. It's not something where you feel like, you know, it's not the Star Child. It's not, you know, Greatest Showman Eternia. It's not, you know, I mean, it's not. Give me a bad mini comic here. It's not.
Well, Mantana's mini comic, Leech's mini comic, any of those are horrible.
Leech or Mantana mini comic, you know, it's, you know, at least you've got Triclops and Trapjaw looking fairly close to their cross-sell art on the back of the card to a certain extent. And,
except in one particular panel where they do that, just where they're not doing the sticker stuff, they must have had another artist just do quick little like black and white drawings or something. There was one of Trapjaw, I think, when they were holding Teela or something. I was like, what is this interpretation of Trapjaw? It was so bizarre, but when it was colored, I mean, I guess anything like it could be interesting to, you know, an extent. So I guess if I was to, before we go to an interesting story, which you'll start off with because you have a good mini comic plan, I'll rate this. I, as bad as the story is, but it's still interesting, I'm still going to give it, I think, maybe a 6 out of 10, I think. I think it was somewhat interesting, but obviously could have been so much better. So what's your final rating?
That's what I kind of feel like, you know, most, of the, I mean, like I said, all the coloring books and sticker books and things like that, they don't have, you know, really thought out stories. In fact, most stories are kind of broken up at times and stuff like that. So I really don't want to give it a rating because I kind of feel like because it doesn't deserve a high rating, but I also feel like I don't want to give it a bad rating because it's you know, you kind of feel like it's a.
Tell me.
Yeah.
Hot
Fudge, my favorite. Look, there's the Ninja Turtle guy behind He-Man.
There you go. There's the Ninja Turtle Hot Fudge guy and the He-Man with his woo. So figured I'd sneak that in for everybody to see.
It makes no sense. But, you know, I just give it a. I guess a 4 or 5. I mean, it's not like, you know, anger inducing, but it's not something that I feel like you would want to put on a wall for a prized framed piece of He-Man memorabilia. Just something that's forgettable. I mean, once we're done talking about it, we'll be completely, you know, unless people want to start referencing Hot Fudge and Woo and.
Let's bring it. Let's make it happen, Ty. Let's be the ones that create the Hot Fudge craze for that character. Like I said, if Tug of War can get this kind of crazy response to where people actually had him being drawn in one of those recent mini comics, we can get the Hot Fudge guy. We're gonna get him in classic.
And pissed off fans to say that part of the next Super 7 subscription is you must sign up to buy this character called Hot Fudge.
Hot Fudge.
You know, people, you know, rioting in the streets and breaking into their nearest Radio Shack or something like that and destroying if there's a Radio Shack still around. But
there is. There's one in my area. But, of course, we have all the old stuff. We don't get the new stuff. So, well, that
your town's kind of like the one in Napoleon Dynamite where it's like the town that time forgot kind of.
Pretty much. Like I said, that's why we rarely get stuff. So, Well, that's that crazy story. So why don't you move to a fun mini comic? You start off with a good mini comic.
For people who are listening to us or watching us, I'll be reading from a New Testament here, so to speak. One of the classic new volumes here.
The mini comic book, right?
The mini comic book, for those who couldn't see it, or if you can't, well, I can't see it on you. Didn't see it on YouTube or on the downloadable version here. But we're talking about Snake Attack today, in a mini comic discussion. And my personal experience with this was that I thought it was a good mini comic as a kid, but was not my favorite. I enjoyed looking at it quite a bit, but I didn't know Extendar was even an actual action figure at the time when I got this mini comic, because I never saw the character anywhere else. I never saw the figure to buy, picture of it, or any. It was strictly, this was my only introduction to Extendar, and it would be like that for quite a while before I forgot how I think it was the Adam Tyner website on the internet, in the early days of the internet, I think it's when I first saw a picture of Extendar. But this is one of those that I've said on the show plenty of times, where there's certain cartoons or comics that I didn't particularly like as a kid, or was like, eh, it's all right. Mm-hmm. And as you get older, you realize there's so much more here. You look at, you know, the story that's being told, the art style and certain panels and stuff like that. And this is a story that's like fine wine here. I mean, I feel like the Bruce Timm's artwork in this, arguably some of the best that he's done for his entire run for He-Man. Like, his Search for Keldor is a classic one. He's got some others, but this one in particular, because as I've said before, this story carries probably the most vicious looking Skeletor I think the series has seen.
He is freaky, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very, very creepy Skeletor. And this is, you know, and Stephen Grant, who wrote this one too, they did a really good job of setting up what you kind of expect your big villains to be doing. And by this point, King Hiss is already established with Tongue Lasher and Rat-Lore. They're hanging out in Snake Mountain with Skeletor and opening up with them plotting about, you know, He-Man just pisses us off to no end. You know, if we can't do anything, we can't accomplish our ambitions because of this man. And they're sitting in Snake Mountain, you know, one away from the other, brooding over how they can destroy He-Man. Skeletor is leaning over looks like a column or a shelf of some kind. King Hiss is holding up a crystal ball, just staring at this image of He-Man. And they're just sitting there thinking about how they can kill He-Man. And it's a great way of, I mean, like the colors alone, they're sitting in the shadows contemplating on how to destroy him. It's a great way of opening up, you know, what we think villains are doing. You know, if they're not actually out doing stuff, they're thinking, they're plotting. And the imagery is so great. And in the background, you see in the shadows, Rat-Lore and Tongue Lasher coming down to tell King Hiss, we're going to do it. We know what we can do. We're going to take down He-Man for you. And of course, he somehow has disappeared by the next page, gone back to the swamps to sleep. And Skeletor challenges them to live up to their bragging that, all right, you can take He-Man. We'll see what you can do. And if you're not, we'll kill you, essentially. And then we're kind of off and running. And it's just it's a comic that, you know, came with Rat-Lore and Tongue Lasher. If you didn't realize that, this was specifically written for them. So if you had Tongue Lasher and Rattler as a kid, you got this mini comic. I don't think it came with anybody else. Not Extendar, not King Hiss, nobody else. As far as I know, just those two characters. And it's a great story. And I mean, we'll talk more about it here, but Joe, get your thoughts on it.
Well, yeah, again, just fantastic art by Bruce Timm. But as you said, you love how it starts, because they're sitting there, you know, always figuring out how to, you know, take care of He-Man. And that's when Rat-Lore and Tongue Lasher, they basically have a thought, or I think, I don't know if it's Tongue Lasher that maybe he's like the leader this time, which you rarely see, I guess, like you said, Tongue Lasher being the leader. It's always, well, it's never really him, is it? Do you ever really see Tongue Lasher?
Right, I mean, and that's why I feel like, you know, NYP was such a drastic change, because Tongue Lasher didn't come along until season two. Rattler comes on in season one. Rattler's established as the, you know, right hand man of King Hiss, whereas in this, they're equals, and I like that. And whereas Tongue Lasher is the talker, Rattler's the muscle. He's the silent muscle, and he doesn't talk at all, which I like that character trait. That the only sound you hear from him is his rattle tail before he strikes.
His battle rattle, like, right?
Great.
Yeah.
I think that was something that should have been carried on. I like the idea of Tongue Lasher being a bragging, you know, like, I can do it, like a big, you know, kind of like Karg in the live-action movie, just, you know, looking to kiss butt. I can do this. I'll take care of it for you, you know. But when he's called on it, he kind of, well, you know, I didn't really mean I could do it today, but that kind of mentality. And it's fun. And to their credit, they write a story where Tongue Lasher and Rattler succeed in taking out He-Man and capturing.
Yeah, because real quick, just how you said how it started, didn't mean to interrupt you. I just want to say one other thing. It's like you said, before they went in, you know, Skeletor was in the chair when they thought it was King Hiss that was going to be there. Before that, they were saying, basically, I don't know why King Hiss is wanting to deal with that sorcerer Skeletor or something like that. Like, they figured, okay, we could get He-Man. So when they come to say this plan, of course, yeah, you're right. Skeletor turns around, like, you know, a master villain in this chair, and it's Skeletor. And they were talking about what they wanted to do. And it's like, okay, well, you can, like, you have to capture or take care of He-Man. If you don't, I'll take care of you, or however he phrased it.
Yeah, so he says, you'll remember one thing, either we'll see the last of He-Man or we'll see the last of you, and you see this kind of, like, kind of small blast in Skeletor's eye, you know, kind of emphasizing, you know what, you know, we will see the end of you, you know, by killing you, essentially, is what it's kind of implying there. And what's good is this, you know, and I'm sure as kids, excuse me, you really didn't kind of realize there was kind of a continuity in some of these, that some of these look like they were meant to be read in order, like Extendars is introduced in The Warrior Machine, whereas this, we see Extendar for the second time, and he's being introduced to Randor and Marlaine, and it's like, look, you're one of the new heroic warriors, we're going to honor you and introduce you to the king and queen here, based on it, essentially what happened in Warrior Machine. And that's cool. There's a little bit of continuity in the mini comics because there's not a whole lot of that, where this looks like it's deliberately picking up from where that one left off. Not deliberately, but it just really feels like, in fact, I'll just verify it here. Because at the end of Warrior Machine, you know, it ends with Extendar, you know, returning to his normal self after they defeated Hordak, and that's the end of the story. So this one clearly could look like it picks up right where that left off, where Adam wants to introduce this new guy to, you know, to everybody. So it's a little bit of continuity there.
Yeah, which is good. And you're right, and Extendar doesn't feel like he's worthy of even being a warrior or a hero or anything as he's being introduced. But, you know, like you said, we won't tell the entire story for those who still want to read it, who maybe don't have that book, want to get it, or get a mini comic. Like you said, we always do a little rough quick rundowns of the mini comic.
Yeah, we don't need to do the, like, because, like, if you don't have the mini comic or the book already, you know, you can find scans of it online, but we don't want to spoil it for you and get it to, you know, we want to highlight the best stuff about this, why it deserves to be discussed in a positive
way. Exactly, because like you said, the Snake Men, pretty much they do accomplish, at least trying to do what they wanted to capture He-Man, but as they bust through this wall and is on this one disc, because Skeletor, when before the Snake Men left, basically said, take anything from Snake Mountain you want, and they take this, like, hover disc.
I like that idea that where Skeletor's like, sure, you know, you have access to my arsenal, if you think you can do it, take something of mine. It's a nice little piece of detail, you know, that, you know, it's just, Stephen Grant told a really good story with this, adding in a whole lot of, because I believe Stephen went on to write comic books, but I think particularly like Spider-Man and some other stuff. So he definitely knows how to flesh out a simple comic book story like this is, you know, and this Skeletor comes off as like a master villain in this, you know, and Rattler and Tongue Lasher come off as the, you know, the toughs, the henchmen, the, not necessarily buffoons, but villains with a chip on their shoulder. We're going to do the impossible. We're going to do what nobody else has been able to do. And
you don't get that. Like you said, you don't get the buffoon feeling. That's what's cool. They really are there to accomplish their stuff. And they do, because when they bust through the wall, you know, like some of the subtle things, like how Bruce Timm, you know, like I think he did a picture of like it might have been Tongue Lashley, I couldn't remember, but putting his like hands grabbing like Marlena by like her face, almost like, you know, like in a threatening mode of what he's gonna do. It's just it seemed like it was just so, I don't know, a lot of feel and life to these depictions that were being, you know, drawn. It just, for me, you know, I mean, for everybody who finally read
yeah. it. Yeah, because what you're talking about is when Extendar comes out of the rubble, you know, he's you know, his legs are extended out, his head's come out, you know, he's become the larger than life character that we know, and Tongue Lasher, you know, makes that threatening gesture to Marlena around her neck, around her face, kind of cupping her face as if like an evil villain would do to a female in distress. And it's just a great touch of saying, you know, like, no, don't you pull anything, we kill her.
Yeah, that's basically what it was, because they're like, you know, you get He-Man or whatever, because like you said, we're going to take care of her. But, you know, again, roundabout, just getting things out there. That's when you see Tongue Lasher. Tongue Lasher is able to freeze up, if you will, or put to stone King Randor, Queen Marlena, and then eventually lick He-Man. And that's what I thought was kind of weird, was in this, his tongue, you know, like we're used to, at least for me, I was used to Snake Face being the one that turned everybody to stone with his face. But, you know, for Tongue Lasher, I think we've seen it in other interpretations, he licks them and then he starts getting hard. He-Man gets hard and then he's just like,
it's the venom that solidifies over them. It's like you get hit with his venom and it spreads all over your body and becomes this shell over your body to where you can't move at all. And
right.
Which you know, obviously, when I saw this, like, Snake Face was a character I wasn't aware of till much later on anyway. So to me, Tongue Lasher's power of striking someone with his tongue and turning them into stone, essentially, or at least a stone shell over them, that was pretty deadly to me as a kid. I just felt like, man, that's pretty hardcore. Like, these are two guys that you just do not, you know, feel like you can just disregard them as simpleton henchmen. Because of, like, that's a deadly, and from my perspective as a kid, and I still appreciate that. And like, obviously with Snake Face, it's a bit redundant to have two guys that can, whereas this kind of puts a shell over somebody, Snake Face turns you completely to stone inside.
Yeah, good. That's a good point. You're right. That makes absolute sense for Snake Face.
You can almost say like Tongue Lasher's power is like paralysis, that you know, because a lot of snakes, I think that like when they strike with their venom, it kind of paralyzes, I think, some of their victims. I'm not a snake expert, but I think some reptiles do that to their victims, I believe.
Yeah, and they just took it further with the shell that goes over them to like completely seal them. And it's pretty much, you would almost say, impenetrable, because the thing was, they're all being taken away on that disc by, you know, Tongue Lasher and Rat-Lor. But Extendar, at the last second, he stretches his arms way out and he grabs He-Man and pulls him off. And they were like, oh, well, you can keep him. We accomplished what we wanted. I was like, well, actually, I thought you didn't, because I thought you wanted to get He-Man. But, well, whatever. But he gets him, and then Extendar tries to break through to, like, you know, free He-Man. And it just makes a crack. He's like, oh, I couldn't do anything. But then He-Man bursts out and he's like, you did help, because that crack is what he needed to bust out of his shell. And so they needed to get to Tongue Lasher and Rat-Lor and the King and Queen as quickly as possible. And they're like, we'll never catch up with them. And that's when He-Man was, well, wait a second, the Sorceress could help us, like, you know, get there quick, you know, and oh, at Castle Grayskull. So eventually, yeah, you don't see it, but they made it to Grayskull, and suddenly the Sorceress must have used one of her teleport, you know, portals to make them appear, and they come through. So He-Man appears. This was the only part I was like, you know, this was product placement. He appears on the
This is one of my favorite parts of this. Even as a kid, I was like, I love this moment we're getting ready to address.
Exactly. So He-Man appears and he's on the Stilt Stalkers. Like, oh shoot.
Yeah, finally.
It's over now, but I guess it's because now you see nothing but, apparently, since he's way up on the Stilt Stalkers and they're flying on the hover discs, that had He-Man's perfect range to grab that disc to knock them off of the, you know, get them off the hover discs. And then that was it. He was doing Stilt Stalkers. I was like, that's it? But, you know, again, cool product placement, but Stilt Stalkers did nothing except have them be tall enough. And you're right, as a kid, you know, of course, I love the toys. So when I see them, I was like, yeah. But then when you really look at it, I'm like, huh? But it was still cool because, like you said, he's up there high enough, grabs, and then I think Tongue Lasher tries to use his tongue to get He-Man again. And he's like, you know, lick him or whatever. And he puts Rat-Lor in front of him, and Rat-Lor turns to stone. And then I think He-Man, or I don't know, did he punch Tongue Lashers so far?
See, the comics didn't hold no punches back, no pun intended.
Yeah.
If he's going to hit somebody, he hits somebody. You know, that was something that the Manny comics were not afraid to throw in here. And, yeah, he, you know, knocks the hell out of Tongue Lasher.
Yeah, he knocks him so far he lands into a pit, a swamp pit, tar pit, swamp pit, whatever. And then suddenly raising up his King Hiss, who has been disturbed of his sleep and is now super angry. And then, of course, you'll see He-Man cracking the shell over, you know, that was on King Randor. That's how he's freeing them. So you see, yes, it's a shell, but I think it's only with He-Man's strength, if you will, or whatever other magic could be done. But you figure that's the only way somebody's going to get out of this coating is by, you know, He-Man's strength. But you're right, you get to see that punch, and you get to see how far it is. It's a really great, fun story, beautiful art, and...
Yeah, go ahead.
John. No, like I said, it was just a great story, fun, you know, go ahead.
I just love the colors in this, too. I mean, and the colorist, I'm not sure who it was, because for some reason, the colors...
Is that Nordling, or... No, not Nordling.
Charles Simpson did the colors, and Red Grant did the ink, so, I'll give those guys a lot of credit, because they really add a lot of the malice to the villains in this, the way it's inked with the shadows and things like that. When He-Man's very serious, the way you draw the right shadowing on the eyebrows and things around the eyes and things. And that panel of He-Man and Stendarr standing in the swamp and He-Man's on the Stiltstalkers. I mean, it's a very beautiful looking picture with the bright colors.
Sure.
Swamp. But it looks like a pretty swamp. I mean, for lack of a better.
Yeah, if you could say, better. Yeah, sure, I understand that.
Yeah, and even the panel before that, when they're heading to Snake Mountain, and you see all these lavish, pretty trees and kind of exotic bushes and things like that, and you got purple and pinks in the sky, and it looks like you're heading into an evil place, but there's still, it just looks so pretty. It's so beautiful. I mean, all the opening at Snake Mountain it's beautiful, but it breathes evil. It just, like, this is what, you know, this would be a great introduction for people who, like, why do you like these mini comics? Or what's a good He-Man story? I'm new to this. You know, like, read this. You know, it's a great way of, like this is a great introduction to the Snake Man, so to speak. If they hadn't read King of the Snake Man or the Snake Man's Revenge of the Snake Man, this could arguably be the best Snake Man mini comic of the entire series, in my opinion.
It is a great one.
I just felt that,
go ahead.
It doesn't really focus on King Hiss's power, but I just kind of felt like it introduces, you know, the Snake Man, like the core Snake Man, you know, Rattler and Tongue Lasher. I'm not saying Cobra Khan's a Snake Man, people, so I know there's a lot of you out there who associate him with the Snake Man. He is a evil warrior who became a spy for Skeletor and joined the Snake Man. He is not a born Snake Man. I do not care what other incarnations. I do not address that. I do not accept that. So that is my personal opinion. So to me, this represents the core Snake Man. That's why it's such a great story. The artwork is beautiful. It's a good story. A lot of action. I love seeing Rattler, you know, leaping at He-Man from behind. You know, you see like the shadow go over He-Man's face to show the danger that's coming. You know, you hear the rattle noise, mm-hmm. and then boom, you know, it's great. It's like the clash of arms for the Snake Man. It's like you're seeing these new villains depicted in a very competent and strong manner. And that's what you wanted to see. You wanted to see these villains are they're bad guys for a reason. They should be feared. And it's why He-Man has to come in and save the day, because it's only somebody like him can stop him. And it's just, right. It's a wonderful story. It just kicks ass left and right and back and forth.
It does.
By the end of it, it's like Rocky and Apollo Creed laying in the middle of the ring. Like, who's going to get it first? I don't know, because it's just a knockout.
It is. And like you said, what's good is, I mean, you know, like a lot of comics that show a cover that has nothing to do with the inside, or you don't see the depictions, you know, like you said, right on the cover, you see Rattler just right on He-Man's back. But then when you
get it's awesome. Yeah. Tongue Lasher sitting there egging him on, you know, yeah, get him.
Yeah, and that's what's cool, because then in the story and in the comic, he does do that jump. So it's like, okay, it's not like it was just used for the cover. You know, he does it again. So I like that, at least something like that. You know, there was some, if you will, reference from the cover to the inside story. Yeah. But since, like you said, this is Tongue Lasher and Rattler, that they came, you know, they had this mini comic came with them. It's cool that they let that be about them, these two figures you just bought, and it really was their time to shine. So that was a really good Tongue Lasher Rattler team up story. It was fantastic.
You just say that made me think of this. There, obviously, King of the Snake Men introduces King Is and Tongue Lasher and Rattler in that book, whereas this is like the sequel to Warrior Machine and the sequel to King of the Snake Men, because Extendar is brought in this to kind of enhance his storyline, and this enhances, you know, the Snake Men that are introduced at the end of King of the Snake Men. It's like here they are doing what. You know, what you come to expect is, oh man, this is great. You know, people say there's no continuity in the Vintage. Like, well, here it is, people.
Yeah,
I'm now putting it together live on YouTube as I'm talking to Joe right now, that we have got continuity in these mini comics, and maybe somebody's pointed out on a forum somewhere. Maybe they pointed out in an old, you know, mailing list or something like that. I don't know, but yeah. I feel like. This is great that we have got continuity in some of these mini comics, and it needs to be addressed. It needs to be celebrated. It needs to be reminded that, you know what, not everything can strictly just be, you know, that there's more continuity out there other than MYP. You know, it doesn't happen a whole lot, but clearly this is when you've got people who clearly wanted to work with comic books and comic book characters like Stephen Grant and Bruce Timm. You know, it's like, they're telling, you know, what we come to know from them, you know, it makes sense that we've got all this continuity. And of course, you know, this eventually leads to, you know, the Ultimate Battleground, the Eternia playset coming out. And then also with the Powers of Grayskull, you feel like you could read these in a certain way that feels like you're following where it's a one-shot story, but it's mildly linked to others, where it doesn't feel like, you know, to find out what happens next, you got to pick up, you know, Snake Face, you know, or something like that. It's, sure. It's not what they were going towards the end of the line, unfortunately, that we never got. But I feel like there's fun to be had if you were to read Warrior Machine, King of the Snake Men, and then wrap it up with the trilogy of Snake Attack. And you could go further than that. But I feel like this is like a good trilogy of the 1986 cast of characters with Extendar and the Snake Men. Snouts, Mountain, Rio Blast, we get their own mini comic, but this is a great way of introducing the new faction with one of the new Heroic Warriors. It's just really cool.
It is. It's a fantastic mini comic. So for those who maybe haven't bought that gigantic mini comic collection book, you know, if you can't afford it, I mean, you can always, like I said, you could find one of these easily on eBay real cheap. Or, you know, there's always mediums. There's always
a way. You could do a Google search for Snake Attack. You'll find scans of pretty much every page we're talking about here. So,
yeah, I'm sure. I mean,
you don't spend the money. There's ways of being able to read it for free.
Exactly.
It really should be in every American library, for that matter, too.
Well, yeah.
You should be able to go to the children's or the adult section and find and check out Snake Attack. Not just in the children's section, but in the adult section too.
Those poor things would have been ripped to pieces if they're ever.
I guess it probably should be in the adult section because, you know, kids would just tear it apart and draw pictures of wieners in there or something like that.
Probably something dirty. So, well, that was the mini comic one. And now we're going to discuss I know you always get excited for the Filmation episodes. I think this is one that you've mentioned a couple times. So if you wanted to start off now, what the name of this is, a little bit about it, and then. Go ahead. What's the Filmation episode we're going to talk about today?
I'm excited to talk about this because it's another one of those episodes that I feel like is underappreciated, overlooked highly. And I did it as a kid. Here's another episode that I just kind of dismissed pretty easily as a kid, and it's Game Plan, featuring the one of two appearances, but I still consider him a one-shot villain. I give this title away to certain people, like if there are only one or two episodes, to me you're a one-shot villain, but Negator. And it's not really explained what his powers are, but clearly he's a sorcerer who loves technology, essentially, and is a kind of a ambitious dictator, looking to, gain technology and knowledge, but also has an infatuation with putting people into his video game slash maze, so to speak. You could be considered a video game. To me, it is a maze, but you could also picture it as, as a video game, kind of how it's depicted. And he's got his two little followers, the Nurbs, look like Jawas,
You know what they look like to
speaking
me?
in native.
Real quick, I didn't mean to cut you off, but
What?
the Nurbs kind of look like Dark Dream, but smaller, at least to me. They remind me of
Yeah,
little
they
mini.
do. They do look like little dark dreams.
So.
And it's as a kid, if Skeletor wasn't the villain, as I've said before, I would dismiss it. Same thing with She-Ra. If Hordak wasn't the villain, like the main villain, I'm like, I'm not watching it. But with this was something that going back because of DVD, and it was on VHS. This was on the same VHS tape with Jor-El's Return. And I when it, that episode would come on, I'm just kind of like, eh. But it's a fun episode. I like Negator as a villain. It's just an evil guy. It's he's got the funky hairdo that comes down between his eyebrows. The white hair comes down. It's almost like makes like a unibrow with his head or something like that. With his
Doesn't he have
hair,
those
excuse me.
big, doesn't he have like big bushy eyebrows too,
Big bushy eyebrows with a white hairdo, like a massive widow's peak that comes down and connects to the bridge of his nose.
he's got a cool look. I mean, he doesn't. I mean,
It's a cool look though. I mean, he looks like, villains are not supposed to be the most handsome men on the planet. They should look, a bit rough for, I guess you don't want to say if, 'cause some villains they think they're cocky and handsome people, and some of them probably are the opposite of that. But this he's I want to see. I feel like there was a particular villain that Negator reminds me of that I've seen in a movie. I can't think of it at the moment here, but that his it's cool that this villain who's very egotistical, but he rely and fancies himself to be like the best of the best, but relies on these two little Nurbs to enhance him all the time. If he's going into battle, he needs these two Nurbs to strengthen him
Power
up.
room.
Battle. He, power up. He relies on these two little creatures to shoot blasts from their face to give him, like, all right, I can teleport because of this. I can fire blasts from my hands, for and destroy dams. I can destroy, I can knock people out of control. He can just do a whole lot. It's pretty neat that it's a villain that really thinks he's, I'm the baddest man in the galaxy, but I have to rely on these two little creatures to, take care of. Essentially, it's like a steroid use. Like, it's got to enhance his abilities because clearly he needs these little creatures. So it's fun. It's and I told Joe before, no one else may think of it this way, but when I got older and started watching it, I was like, when He-Man and Ram-Man get into, well, I guess before we get that far, the episode is that this Negator wants Man-at-Arms. He appreciates his intelligence and his affinity for making all kinds of great inventions, and wants to hire him, for his, plan for world domination. Obviously, Man-at-Arms refuses, and he captures Teela as a way of forcing him into his clutches. And then He-Man gets word of it. Ram-Man, Battlecat, and He-Man go after Man-at-Arms and Teela, and get stuck, or Battlecat and Teela get recaptured. And it's up to Ram-Man and He-Man after they've been forced into the video game slash maze, that they have to find their way out of it to save everybody and stop Negator. And it's great imagery that when they get put inside the maze, you got Negator's face hovering above them inside the maze, and mocking them, saying no one's ever won this before. You got lightning flashing inside the maze. It's so cool looking, and I it's he's a character that I would love to see sitting on the shelf along with Batros and Mask and Chakotay and Evil Seed.
I think we will. I think we will see him because, like I said, I mean, it was just a genius episode with how it starts off. Again, quick little synopsis. It starts off with Prince Adam. I don't know if he's like chiseling or, well, that was a weird motion on camera. Okay, well, whatever. He has a chisel and
You pervert, where's Chris? Why don't you take a seat? Take a seat right over there.
You know, why is it I can't do anything without it looking wrong? But I talk with my hands
Well,
so much.
considering earlier in the show that you said Lizard Man licks people and they get hard.
What?
I know it's funny you said that. I was like, I'm not even going to stop him on
it's
that.
It's always, okay. Well, I didn't get it. Thanks, Derek. Well, it's inadvertent, but okay, picture a chisel in my hand, and Prince Adams is chiseling. Never mind. He's chiseling a rock, and he's trying to sculpt. And all of a sudden, you know, of course, Man Arms shows up with his beam ray. He's like, I have something that might be able to help my beam ray can do. It's like, oh, it's going to help with sculpting. Like, just convenient. So Prince Adam just aims it and then makes an Orko sculpture or something. And the Nerbs see it. And the Nerbs, you know, of course, show Negator. And then Negator is like...
You're getting ready to call him Magneto, aren't you?
What did you say?
You started to say Mag, and I'm like, you're getting ready to call him Magneto, aren't you?
No, I was actually almost saying Megator. I used the M word.
Negator.
Yeah, I meant Negator. So, yeah, so he sees it. You know, he wants it. And then he, like, overpowers, makes the thing blow into a giant rock and make a gigantic, like, a cave, if you will. So, I mean, he sees the power, but he wants it, just like you said. And he captures then Teela. And then all of them have to go try to rescue. And, of course, then even Man-at-Arms is, like, captured and trying to blackmail you. Like, you better make stuff for me or keep your daughter. But, you know, he wants this. But what I like about Negator is just it's a unique, different character. Like, he is focusing all about these games and these Nerbs that power him up, and then with that power he can create like crazy like creatures that are not only in his maze but things that he could shoot outside, like the one thing that He-Man knew it was going to take it to them, like it swallows He-Man up and takes him to the maze. It's just, I like seeing that kind of stuff, that he has these powers that you wouldn't expect, along with it seems like he turns into energy. And so it's yeah. It was like, it felt more like he was like some kind of living video game character, slightly in a way, but he was all obsessed up on this maze. And he gets Ram-Man and He-Man in this maze and how to defeat it. And eventually He-Man, you know, figures it out, you know, to get out of this maze. They jump on this arrow that was going through the maze at one time, and he uses this to like get out of, you know, the maze to be the first people to solve it. But, I mean, I like seeing just the combination of, like I said, video game references, a new character that, like you said, it's not focusing on Skeletor. It doesn't have any of his cronies, no Beast Man, Triclops, nothing. It's just all focusing on Negator, his Nerbs, and, like I said, his obsession on having Man-at-Arms make stuff for him. Probably not only to just help him conquer the world, but maybe even enhance his crazy video game. I don't know. But I know
absolutely. Sure, yeah, he would use it to create more monsters, more contraptions to make the maze even more deadly or and more exciting for him to sit and watch. I mean, there's similarities between like him and the Game Master, who loved to just capture people, put them in an arena and make them fight. So that, yeah. And then he's got the ambitious dictator like Skeletor. So he's like an amalgam of the Game Master and Skeletor or Hordak, you know, like Hordak, 'cause he's obsessed with technology. Like he wants more of it. It's yeah, you could probably say that Negator is a combination of Hordak and the Game Master almost.
Yeah. And the one other thing, at least I noticed, or not noticed, my interpretation could absolutely be wrong, but you know, he's so obsessed on winning, or obsessed on winning, not losing, that I think when He-Man tries to take him out at the end, I don't know if he says something like, "No, you will not get me." And I thought he just churned into energy and then exploded in the machine. I was like, did he kill himself?
I took it as because he turns into energy and at the beginning of the episode when he wants to introduce himself to Man-at-Arms and teleports himself. That's what I took as that he did.
Oh, I mean, it didn't look like he turned to energy and went into the machine and blew up. Maybe I didn't look at the ending right, but I actually thought that he destroyed himself. Like, he's so obsessed on winning that, He-Man, you're not going to even catch me because I'm going to destroy or kill myself. But, I mean, like you said, maybe it was just he turned to energy and disappeared.
Well, he comes back in Trouble's middle name later on in season two, so...
Then there you got me. I didn't even know that. Well, then there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, of course, that's a, you know,
oh, wait a
forgettable
second.
Episode.
Okay, but hey, you could look at it like this, since it's a video game, he has, like, extra lives or something, he uses one up, he died there, but then he comes back. I don't know, it's video game reference.
Yeah, he restarted the game and came back,
exactly.
But he lost all his nerve power-ups, so now he's got to rely on, you know, getting through this, you know, less than reputable episode to see if he can win this time.
His nerves are You could say his nerves are his version of Mario's mushrooms to power him up.
Stars or the flower, you know, or something like that. So, I mean, because this is, you know, it's, I believe it was loosely based on a video game script or a script where a Skeletor transports the heroes to a video game world, so to speak. It's, that's what this episode is loosely based on. It's, I mean, it's in the book. It's in James E. Talk's first book that he wrote too. But it's having not read that, I really didn't pick it up directly as video games in general. Like, it looks like the Batman anime series. If you're so smart, why aren't you rich? Where the Riddler creates the Minotaur game.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great episode, but I feel like there's similarities to that too. Where it's not necessarily the in that one where that particular game is a video game, but he creates the maze of the Minotaur, actual maze itself. Whereas like this, it's an actual maze. They're transported into it, so it's video game. I could see, but also could see like it's a big maze, and the guy wants to sit and watch to see if these guys can get through this maze.
Sure, and how he looks at it, you're right, how Negator sits back in his chair and he's watching a screen and doesn't even always say, like, you know, player starter. I thought video game, like, text, like, before.
It does, subject inserted, game ready, like the computer's telling him, you know, the game is ready, the pieces are ready. So it's definitely video game inspired, but also could be, you know, a strict maze, which mazes are games, you know, it's... Can you get to the middle? Can you get to the end? Can you get to the other side? And it's an underappreciated episode. You got a fun villain, fun little cohorts that are with him. It's a fun little adventure that includes Ram Man and Battle Cat, you know, doing some good stuff in it. And
really cool piece. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh no, I was just saying everybody's treated good. No one's written poorly. Teela's written a bit naive, you know. But not in a hot-headed way. She's just, I mean, she's tricked, obviously, but it's just kind of funny to where Negator shows up as a palace guard in disguise. Prince Adam said for you to meet him in the Valley of the Desert. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't recognize you or something.
Oh, are you new here?
Yeah.
Oh, well, hope you like it here. Yeah, you're just so naive. You
big
know?
Old bushy eyebrows popping out of the helmet eyes.
Yeah. Unibrow doesn't give it away. It's just like she clearly is just like, well, I hope you like it here. Just
no, but I mean, it's an exciting episode, like you said from beginning to end. It is fun. It's interesting, and beyond that, when you're talking about different things, I thought, and I know, like I said, maybe you would know if it was reused. There's a piece of animation of Battle Cat I thought was really, really interesting. After Ram Man and Battle Cat pop down through the grate, and then Battle Cat does this roar and yell at the nerves. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a really exaggerated roar on him. Like, his face gets really kind of crazy.
Yeah, but it looked like really new animation. I don't know if they used it in any of the episodes.
Yeah,
but...
You know, there's certain episodes, no, that I do not have memorized or that I don't know as well. That, to me, that's the episode that sticks out. Like, that may have been the only one.
Yeah.
Could be wrong. You know, I'm sure they're animation experts, you know, that know certain bits of animation. I picked up on a lot of certain bits of animation that are reused in certain episodes, maybe not as frequently and things like that, but definitely could easily be looked at as, you know, a unique piece just for this episode.
Yeah, it was. So that's why I guess we're recommending it. Like I said, it's a fun episode, but obviously since Negator has such a following and people that really enjoy, you know, I guess their thoughts of a character of him being made into a figure, possibly for classics, which I'm sure I bet it'll happen eventually. And if it does, you might as well see where this whole, I mean, where he comes from. You might as well see his origin and watch the episode. You know, just don't enjoy the figure. Why don't you try to enjoy the episode? Because, I mean, it's an exciting episode. It was fun from beginning to end. And I think fans out there, like I said, would like it. They can always go to YouTube and just type in Game Plan E-Man and it'll pop up. They'll be able to watch it. You could see it somewhere.
Just a fun little another thing too is that there's pieces of music that play at the beginning of this episode that were only featured in Diamond Ray Disappearance. Like, if you watch that episode, there's certain pieces of music you don't hear throughout the rest of the series, but you go back and, like, when He-Man and Cringer check out the cave, the music that's playing is when Skeletor and the Evil Warriors are approaching Castle Grayskull, and they're that's just one particular piece. There's a couple other pieces that are featured in Diamond Ray, like, it's Diamond Ray Disappearance. I remember just because of the distinct music that's in that particular episode. Very moody. It's different. It's unique. And I mean, those are on YouTube also. But you could find this episode on YouTube. If you have Netflix, the first season of He-Man is on Netflix. I actually watched it on Netflix earlier this week. I mean, obviously it's the DVDs. You should be able to, I mean, you could probably do a Google search and find it. If you don't have Netflix or you can't find a good version of it on YouTube, do a Google search. Sometimes you can find cartoons uploaded on various other websites that, play Looney Tunes cartoons and stuff like that or whatever. So
Yeah, they can find it. Yeah.
I really feel like if people go back and rewatch this episode, I think it definitely steps out a lot more than what probably most people think, because I know a lot of people are inclined to say Origin of the Sorceress. I'm not saying that this is one of the best of all time,
But it's good.
but it's definitely an episode. It's an A plus episode. I give it an A plus.
It is.
It's or A minus. It gets a good grade in my book, because I like the villains, I like the story, I like the peril that the characters are in. It's fun to see He-Man and Ram-Man inside. The maze is not as elaborate, but it looks cool, and it just you appreciate what they were trying to do in the episode. So for that, I give it a solid grade on that.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think this might be where the origin of me playing video games and making customs came from. Because I was like, "Hey, I had the best and He-Man." It's like, "Wow, it's the best of all the worlds." I'm watching Masters, then they're doing sculpting. I started sculpting video games. I played video games. Like, you just wrapped it all in one in that one episode. Maybe that's why I liked it.
It all comes back to Negator and the nerves, which means Joe has to make some nerves.
Nerves. Yes, I might have to make little mini dark dreams, but I bet. I think I said we'll get a Negator. We will, but
Like to think if a Super Saiyan gives us a Negator, that we're going to get two nerves that come with him.
yeah, those
No,
nerds.
I can't have a Negator sitting on my shelf and I've got two little nerves hiding behind his legs, like peeking around,
I think we could get him. I bet
You
we
just.
would.
Yeah, I'm maybe we'll get like in the Horsemen or hearing this or Ryan Flynn's hearing this. Like, by God, those boys are right on the money. Get the Horsemen in here. We got some work we got to do here. We put in the episode game plan. We're gonna make this a reality here.
Yeah, because the only nerds I've seen was there's a
So.
cool customizer out there, Peter Barbarossa, and he made a vintage Negator, and he made little nerds to go with them. So I was like, that's pretty cool.
I think I saw it. Looked pretty good too.
Like I said, I love seeing what other fans can do. And yeah, so yeah, it was a great recommendation. I'm glad you recommended that episode. It was fun. So, well.
Yeah, that was that once we did this podcast, I'm like, that's an episode I particularly wanted to get to, because I know that's something that, like I said, I feel like there's only a certain small group of episodes that are constantly repeated and referenced and stuff like that. And that's one I feel like needed to be fleshed out and discussed. And I hope people that way, after they listen to this, they'll be in the mood to watch it or figure out why is this episode so good. Well, let me pop it in and find out. Let me click it on and find out. And we're not saying it's going to change your perspectives on the cartoon or something like that. It's just I told you what I was going to say this earlier. It's like a Saturday night kind of, sci-fi monster movie episode. It's like a popcorn episode, He-Man and Ram-Man trapped in this dark video game maze, and stuff like that. It's kind of like what you see on a late Saturday night at 10, 11 o'clock at night on Monster Vision or something like that. It's hard for me to describe. A popcorn episode is what I would call it. Just a fun by the numbers episode with a great villain. It's great. It's a very good episode.
Yeah, well, hopefully they enjoy it. If they don't, hey, I mean, at least they give it a shot, and then
Well, hey, if you didn't like it, at least it's better than Star Child.
we'll have to cover that in an upcoming episode. No,
Gosh, man, it's like we've had enough
but
bad.
we won't do that.
I'm looking at this one, we got to focus on either laughing or some good story, because, man, I feel like so many episodes have just been focused on mass hysteria.
Well, yeah, I mean, we covered a lot of good ones. The Faker story, I thought, was pretty much the best out of all
Hey,
three.
consider what we've done in the past podcasts over the recent weeks here. That Faker sticker book story was a walk in the park.
I knew you loved it. I knew it. So, well, since we just wrapped up three stories and stuff, why don't you go ahead and give some recommendations before we wrap up the show?
My epic moment for the week would be He-Man realizing that he can't kill Skytree in Dragon's Gift, and going back to Granimir and telling Granimir to his face, we don't have your gift, picking other gifts or send us to the realm of demons. Like, I just love the accepting that, look, we can't. Oh, my, one of my favorite lines of the entire series is He-Man looking at Grandmere said, "We will not take a life to save a life." And Grandmere looking so, you know, snide, just the idea that these humans are refusing to give me what I want and are not really, they're defying me, but they're also standing up to me. And the courage of He-Man in that episode, accepting that this he's allowing, saying, look, we're not going to give you what you want, pick something else or kill us. You know, as we will accept. I was like, I love that moment. The music that plays in that from the moment that He-Man says, we can't do this. You feel bad for Skytree. Teela kind of accepts it too. They go back and standing up to Grandmere that we don't have. It's great. It's one of my most favorite moments of the entire series is that, and it's touched on a little bit in the mini comic, but fleshed out so much more Laird DeTillio's writing in that. So that's my epic moment of the way. I've already recommended Dragon's Gift. I'm going to keep focusing on epic moments.
Okay.
And just go back, pay attention to that particular scene in that episode and see if it strikes you the way that I did.
That is a good epic moment for the week. I agree.
Very, very. And before I pass it over to Joe, I got a update on the new Leech mini comic.
Oh, okay.
My buddy Carson today just sent me the finalized cover for the new Leech mini comic that we're working on together, and it's on the screen at the moment for YouTube viewers. This is what the cover is going to look like. And no, Leech is not a giant in this story. This is a kind of a take on, you know, 1950s horror movies where you've got the monster hovering on the poster, you know, high above the heroes that are in peril. So you've got, you know, Cyclone, Man-at-Arms, and He-Man wandering through the swamps, you know, and Leech is lurking above them, you know, kind of like a classic movie poster fashion. So he's working on it and just finished the cover today. So this is my way of trying to get this out to let everyone know it's coming. And I'll be posting this on the various Facebook pages too to get people's interest and let them know what to expect, as this is the first teaser image. So thanks, Doug, for sharing that. And we hope to have some more for you as soon as Carson. He's a busy man, but with each update, I'll throw out a small teaser there. We can get closer and closer to getting this out to everybody.
And I'm excited as well because I want to be left in the dark. I don't want to know what's happening until it comes out too. So you'd think that I would tell Tyler, share with me, but I don't want to know anything.
Joe Stickler for that. I wanted to spill the beans to a lot of the story before, but he told me, Tyler, shut the hell up.
Yep. I don't want to know. I like being surprised and excited about things. So, well, before I give tell you the places to go, I just want to let you know in a couple hours, I want you guys to go to our Fans of Power Facebook page because I'm going to post up a couple questions about maybe what was going on in this episode. Not maybe, what was going on in this episode. And there'll be two particular questions. And the first person that can respond with the correct answers on that post when I put it up, you'll win from, we have a Dark Horse book for the whole encyclopedia of the Filmation cartoon. That gigantic book from Dark Horse, you know the one. There it is, that one right there. If you guys can answer, first one to answer that correctly, both questions, you win that. So we'll be posting up the details in a couple hours on the Fans of Power Facebook page. So, well, with that being said, like always, go to fansofpower.com. Go to popculturenetwork.com, go to hemanworld.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe, He-Man and She-Ra, Ultimate Fan Group, all great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
Yo, Rumsfeld!
Oh man, the Furbs is the best.